Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we have a special report on powerful protests against police violence that drew thousands of participants in La Mesa on Saturday, and on the riots that occurred later that night, leading to the burning down of banks and a historic building, as well as looting and other damage across the city. You'll also hear about the resilience of La Mesa residents who came out during the night to help save this historic downtown district from destruction, and a different kind of mob that turned out Sunday morning to clean up and rebuild and begin the healing process, as well as a fund established to help rebuild La Mesa. We'll also have highlights of local civil rights leader Reverend Shane Harris from his trip to Minnesota, where he brought a check to help the family of George Floyd, the black man whose killing by a white police officer sparked protests nationwide. Hear about Reverend Shane's efforts to bring about positive changes on today's show. We'll also have some news on COVID-19's local impacts, including a disturbing rise in domestic abuse and an unemployment rate here double the national average. Now, if you're a survivor of COVID-19, the County Health Department is urging you to donate blood plasma that can help save lives of others with the coronavirus. And finally, on People Power, we'll tell you about a Santee Loves rally held to stand up against hate and promote inclusiveness, coming on the heels of recent incidents involving hate symbols on masks worn into grocery stores in Santee amid the county's requirement for facial coverings due to the pandemic. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. La Mesa became the spotlight of international news over the weekend when thousands of protesters against police violence took to the streets, shutting down roadways and major freeways. The protesters demonstrated in part over the killing of George Floyd, an African-American man killed by a white police officer in Minneapolis. The officer was videotaped kneeling on Floyd's neck for over 8 minutes while he gasped, "I can't breathe," repeatedly until he died. The officer has been charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter, but three other officers who looked on have been fired and not yet charged, sparking protests nationwide. Locally, protesters also targeted La Mesa after a video on social media showed a La Mesa police officer pushing a black man into a sitting position following an altercation. That video claims the officer accused the man of assaulting him, though it is unclear from the video what may have occurred before or after the brief clip. The officer has been placed on administrative leave pending an investigation. The protest Saturday in La Mesa began peacefully, with marchers chanting George Floyd's name and other messages. And here's what that sounded like. Among the speakers locally was Desiree Smith, who has been lobbying for a ban on chokeholds by San Diego police since the controversial hold was used on her teenage son.
Smith, I'm here on behalf of my son, Eric Smith. He was choked by the police in 2014 at Lincoln High School. And until we get this ban, I will be out here fighting with you. Yes! Yeah!
Protest began at the La Mesa Police Station, then a march proceeded down University Avenue, went onto Interstate 8 and 125, shutting down traffic and breaching a CHP barricade before protesters were turned back. The demonstrators returned to the La Mesa Police Station, where some in the crowd then began engaging in criminal acts, breaking windows and spray-painting graffiti on the police station. Some demonstrators hurled bottles at law enforcement officers and rocks at a Bearcat-armored vehicle. Police and sheriff officers in riot gear fired tear gas and rubber bullets into the crowd. Here's what it sounded like. Woo! One woman was reportedly struck in the face by a rubber bullet and hospitalized. By evening, vehicles from outside the initial protest had been observed flooding into the area filled with people wearing all black clothing and black masks. Some carried baseball bats and incendiary devices. Many of these people were white and may belong to groups not affiliated with the Black Lives Matter movement or the earlier protest, which had included local residents as well as some from San Diego and elsewhere. There were rumors on social media that some of these outsiders were anarchists, Antifa, or white supremacists, but there's no evidence yet of exactly who they were. Paul Cruz later was at the scene outside Chase Bank, where another major tragedy was unfolding.
Actually, as you now are seeing a lot of law enforcement vehicles, which are now guarding the entire block, which has the police department on it, which is the kind of the civic center of La Mesa. Right now, there seems to be now a confrontation brewing at Spring Street and in front of a Chase bank. And so you see numerous people, I mean hordes of people in front of the bank on both sides. And once again, you are seeing very little law enforcement, but boom. But although that there were, it looks like the law enforcement is avoiding physical contact, but rather trying to use the tear gas canisters.
By nightfall, Chase Bank and Union Bank in downtown La Mesa were in flames. A historic building housing an engineering firm also burned to the ground. The situation was also tense at nearby City Hall.
Well, right now that the San Diego Sheriff has just deployed tear gas. And this is like a war out here because you see fires which have been burning right now near the Civic Center. But you also see how everybody, oh my goodness, this is this is the first time I've had tear gas. Whoa!
Oh.
This is intense.
Wow. Well, stay safe, Paul. At the La Mesa Springs Shopping Center, fires were started inside the Vaughn store and a secondhand sporting goods shop. A truck was burned. Windows were broken by rioters with baseball bats, and several businesses were looted before police finally arrived. Looters also broke into Walmart and Target at Grossmont Center. In downtown La Mesa Saturday night, an emergency vehicle was burned. A fire was started inside the city clerk's office at City Hall, where some records were destroyed, although historic documents were saved. Through much of the long night, no firefighters came to address many spot fires. No firefighting aircraft were dispatched. The sheriff declined to use water-dropping helicopters after rioters pointed lasers at a sheriff helicopter, an action which could blind a pilot, one of the officers on scene told us. Councilman Bill Baber told East County Magazine that mutual aid fire crews would not enter the area because there were not enough law enforcement officers to protect the safety of firefighters. At 1:30 in the morning Sunday, the city manager declared a curfew, and one city leader privately shared concerns that the entire village could be lost. During the long night, as posts on social media and video live-streamed by a freelance videographer made clear that looting was starting to occur in the downtown village, some business owners, friends, and neighbors took courageous actions to save La Mesa's century-old downtown village from burning down and spare businesses already hurt by a two-month shutdown during the pandemic from even more losses to looting or fires. Teresa Favreau, head of the La Mesa Village Association and owner of Amethyst Moon, describes how her business was saved.
Some kids tried to break and smash the door with skateboards, and thankfully some community members and shop owners protected my shop.
Wow. How did they do that? How did they scare them away?
I don't know. Some of them had baseball bats.
A resident who asked not to be identified also spoke with us and described the actions of citizens who formed a human chain to protect La Mesa's downtown.
Well, we had heard through friends over social media that people were starting to bash in the doors of our friends' businesses, so a number of people came out and supported them and stood in front of their businesses, and, you know, we just came out in numbers. The people that stood in front of businesses, they didn't screw with their businesses. They just passed on by and only hit the ones that didn't have people standing in front of them. So we walked up and down the street and tried to protect as many businesses as we could.
That's very courageous. Were you armed in any way?
You know, I had a walking stick with me just for my own protection mostly, but we did have people that had bats and, you know, big plumbing plumbing, you know,
but
equipment.
But not guns, just...
No, didn't see anybody with guns. We're not that kind of people, I don't think, unless, you know, it comes to that.
Yeah.
But.
Now, were the protesters, I know that a lot of them had baseball bats. Were they armed with anything heavier than that you saw?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I really don't believe that it was the protesters that did this. I live very close by. I actually live down on University, and I saw quite a few people driving into the town, and they were ready to go. We saw people leaving in cars, you know, jumping in trunks to get out of town after they had done their damage.
Were you able to tell, I mean, what these people looked like? Did you see...
Well, most people had on masks and, you know, were trying to pretend like they were trying to be COVID safe, but they were working in groups and numbers, and, you know, they had seekers and they had people, you know, busting windows, and other people would run in if they could get it in. And
So it looked like an organized effort.
They've done this before.
Yeah.
People have done this before. It wasn't, I mean, I'm sure there were some randoms that have never done it and they were just jumping on the bandwagon, but for the most part, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah. Did you observe any fires besides the big buildings that were burning?
A couple of times we saw people try to set fires, mostly like in a trash can or at the base of a building, and any of the businesses that were available would grab their fire extinguishers and people would run out and go and extinguish it and chase the people off.
Very good.
I do have a friend that lives over by the train station, the historic train station.
Yeah, I haven't been down there yet. Was that saved?
Yeah, it was saved, but the gentleman did see it from his home, and he has it on video that they tried to light it on fire, and then he ran out and scared them off, and the fire went out. So
wow.
Was really glad that he was there for that too.
Very good. We're hearing that happened at Sprouts also, that
yes.
Armed neighbors came out, according to social media posts.
Yes.
And chased away would-be looters.
Yes, I've heard that as well. And that's what we do. Thank you to everybody else that helped me protect La Mesa, because this is our town, and we care.
The next morning, on Sunday, a different kind of mob descended on La Mesa. Some 500 to 600 residents, armed with paintbrushes, brooms, and buckets, came to volunteer to clean up the debris, sweep away broken glass, and paint over graffiti across the downtown area.
And we're down here at La Mesa Springs. There are hundreds of volunteers. Panda Express has been giving away meals to the volunteers. They've given out 100 so far. The Rock Church is out here. They're doing a streaming a live prayer vigil. Hundreds and hundreds of people, we're hearing some 500 or 600 volunteers, have turned out all over La Mesa to help clean up the mess that the rioters left last night.
One man came all the way from Alpine to help out.
What's your name?
My name is Jerry Corley.
Jerry Corley. And are you a La Mesa resident?
I'm from Alpine.
So you came all the way from Alpine after you heard about this. Wow.
I went in here, found the place, got my car, got my paint, and I'm painting.
So you just went to Home Depot and you're helping paint over the graffiti.
Yep, painting over the graffiti.
Good for you.
We're and make it look good so we can open up tomorrow.
Excellent. And did you buy the paint yourself?
Yeah.
Very good.
Bought the roller, and we're gonna make it green today.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, sir.
In downtown La Mesa, the air was still pungent with the odors of burning rubble and tear gas. As I stood looking at the smoldering ruins, someone played taps on a bugle nearby. Rioters had burned a flag overnight at the American Legion building, but on Sunday morning, a new flag waved proudly out front, a symbol of La Mesa's resilience. Instead of the terrifying sounds of firebombs heard Saturday night across La Mesa, the sounds of hammering and sawing filled the air downtown Sunday morning, with volunteers helping business owners board up windows in case rioters returned. But Sunday night passed peacefully in La Mesa, where Border Patrol officers and members of multiple local police departments came to help protect the city. Instead of graffiti, messages of hope and gratitude were painted onto plywood, sidewalks, and the side of a burned building. A Rebuild La Mesa fund has been started on Facebook by the East County Chamber of Commerce and Phil Ortiz, a councilman in neighboring El Cajon. And by Monday morning, more than $50,000 had been donated as East County residents came together to help La Mesa businesses rebuild. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, from La Mesa, my hometown, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
The brutal killing of George Floyd, an African-American man, by a white police officer, has sparked riots in Minnesota, including the burning of a police station, as well as protests nationwide. On Friday, Reverend Shane Harris, San Diego civil rights leader with the People's Alliance for Justice, flew to Minneapolis to deliver a large financial contribution to the family of George Floyd for funeral expenses. Reverend Harris also hand-delivered a letter to Hennepin County District Attorney Mike Freeman's office urging him to charge the officers or ask the Minnesota Attorney General's office to take the case. Video posted on social media showed an officer kneeling on Floyd's neck for some 9 minutes while Floyd repeatedly tells police officers that he can't breathe until he died. Officers claim he resisted arrest for a nonviolent offense before the filming began. Reverend Harris, in a statement sent to local media Friday, says a black man went to death row before he could ever get to court over an alleged nonviolent offense. He pledged support of his civil rights organization to Floyd's family, and says the district attorney there has the responsibility to deliver justice to the people of Minneapolis and Hennepin County, and we are standing behind those residents until that is done. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
After weeks of stay-home orders during the COVID-19 pandemic, local organizations that support victims of domestic abuse report a sharp rise in people seeking services for the first time. Dilquaz Ahmed of License to Freedom, an organization that primarily serves refugee and immigrant victims of domestic abuse, told East County Magazine that 80% of the calls she received in the last month were from people who had never interacted with the organization before. She says, quote, "We have never been as busy as we have been during COVID-19, adding that License to Freedom's caseload has doubled since the start of the pandemic. The organization has been filing a restraining order on behalf of at least one victim almost every day. Ahmed reports that many issues reported by those seeking help are directly related to coronavirus. Abusers have used the changes in circumstances to seize power and control in households. Ahmed says victims have reported many instances of financial abuse, such as abusers keeping stimulus checks or hiding checks from their partners. The quarantine has created a lot of problems, says Ahmed, who serves primarily Middle Eastern communities, which are typically very family-oriented. Domestic disputes were often arbitrated by extended family, and abused partners could flee to family members' homes. Now, many people have had their safety plans to get away from abusers disrupted because they don't want to spread the virus to elderly parents or relatives. One woman told Ahmed that her husband threatened to kill her, yet she refused Ahmed's offer to pay for a hotel room. According to Ahmed, the woman said she would rather die than put her kids in a situation where they could contract coronavirus. Another organization, the Center for Community Solutions, or CCS, has not received a spike in callers overall to its 24-hour hotline, but has received many calls from people who never sought help from CCS before. Many of the issues they are experiencing also relate directly to COVID-19. Verna Griffin Tabor, CEO of CCS, says, quote, "Some of the first-time callers are calling about their partners intentionally trying to expose them to COVID, refusing to wear a mask, taunting their partners that way." She views these tactics as ways for abusers to inflict fear and potentially put their partners at risk. Griffin Tabor is also worried about other tactics, such as taking away insurance cards and documents to prevent victims from seeking care. At one point, CCS had no shelter capacity, but that has improved since landlords are still willing to meet with the clients, due in part to moratoriums on evictions for renters impacted by COVID-19. Griffin Tabor says, quote, "We've been able to transition some of our folks into longer-term housing." Griffin Tabor says the need for everything is much wider than in the past, including transportation, food, diapers, and shelter. KPBS reports that San Diego Sheriff's Department had a 3% increase in calls reporting domestic disputes from March 1st through April 25th, compared to the same time period a year earlier. But victims' advocates worry that the actual rate of abuse is much higher. With abusive partners staying home more, victims may have fewer opportunities to call hotlines for help. Griffin Tabor concludes, "When things are lightened up in terms of the shelter-in-place order, I anticipate that we are going to get more calls." If you need help due to domestic violence or you know someone who does, CCS runs a free, confidential hotline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call the hotline at 888-385-4657. That number again is 888-385-4657. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the network for social justice, this is Brianna Gomez.
The San Diego Blood Bank is partnering with the county to encourage San Diegans who have recovered from COVID-19 to donate blood plasma, the liquid part of blood which contains antibodies. This plasma could help treat people who are hospitalized or seriously ill from the novel coronavirus. While currently there's no vaccine or proven treatment for COVID-19, convalescent plasma may help patients fighting the virus because the plasma has antibodies against it, says Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's top health official. Any of the more than 7,000 people who tested positive for COVID-19 locally and have recovered could donate plasma, and this is being encouraged by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. David Wellis, the chief executive officer of the San Diego Blood Bank, says the procedure is simple but tremendously impactful. So far, several hundred doses of convalescent plasma have been distributed across Southern California, especially in San Diego County, but more is needed since supply is not keeping up with hospital demand. To donate, go to sandiegobloodbank.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Unemployment analysis by the San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG, shows unemployment countywide is at 30.1%. An all-time high. That's far higher than the national average of 14.7%, and with 39 million Americans out of work as of last week, according to the Department of Labor, the national unemployment rate is the highest it's ever been, even worse than during the Great Depression. More than 500,000 people locally are unemployed, and nearly 460,000 of those lost their jobs after the COVID-19 pandemic began March 7. A zip code breakdown reveals that the worst unemployment rates as of May 7th are in our inland region, including East County and Southeast San Diego neighborhoods. The highest rates are in Logan Heights at 41.9% and the College area at 36.9%. Among East County cities, two El Cajon zip codes had 33.6% and 32.9% respectively. The Santa Isabel community had 32.9% and Escondido, 32.5%. Inner-city East San Diego neighborhoods, including Encanto, also had very high rates, as well as some South Bay and North County communities in the 32 to 37% range. All of these areas had low single-digit unemployment rates before the pandemic. The survey reflects data through May 9, before some restaurants and retailers began reopening in recent days. During the 9th week of lockdown due to coronavirus, unemployment rates continued to rise, with 22,800 jobs lost between May 2nd and 9th. As of May 21st, when SANDAG last updated its analysis, SANDAG reported new job information remained slow, with businesses making tough decisions, including claiming bankruptcy or choosing not to reopen after stay-at-home orders are lifted. SANDAG indicated for the local economy to significantly improve will require completion of Phase 2 and beginning Phase 3 portions of the governor's roadmap to recovery. Over the past week, many restaurants have reopened for dine-in services, and retailers have begun reopening for shopping in stores. Some of these businesses are now hiring again, though it remains to be seen what degree customers will return, with some ready to venture out, but others opting to stay home longer to avoid potential exposure to the virus. Even if customers fill every table, however, restaurants face daunting challenges due to social distancing requirements, with some losing half to two-thirds of seating. Continuing takeout or delivery options may help cushion some of that loss. Phase 3 businesses are not yet open, including gyms, hair salons, and more. A cautionary note on moving too fast, however, may be found in Missouri, where one hairdresser working despite having symptoms in a reopened salon exposed 91 customers to COVID-19, CBS News reports. Phase 4 businesses that draw large crowds could remain shuttered until sometime next year, such as concert halls and sporting events with spectators. In addition, loss of conventions and tourists shying away from traveling on airlines and cruise ships can be expected to continue to depress San Diego's visitor-based economy for many months to come. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with a People Power report. A Santee community group known as Santee Loves organized Demonstrate Love, a vehicle rally held Wednesday to counter two racially charged incidents at a Santee Bond store and a Food for Less earlier this month. Those incidents, which went viral on social media and made international headlines, involved a man wearing a Ku Klux Klan hood and a couple who wore masks with Nazi swastikas. Both stores were in Santee, although the couple with the swastika mask don't live in the city and are residents of unincorporated El Cajon. Santee's mayor and other community leaders have denounced the actions. Those who wore hate symbols on their masks have claimed they were protesting the county's requirements to wear masks in stores due to COVID-19, but one of the men has a long history of ties to white supremacists. The sheriff investigated the incidents and concluded that though the actions were offensive, no laws were violated. The Santee Loves Vehicle Rally was designed to promote tolerance and inclusiveness. Though planned over the last 2 weeks, the event ironically occurred on the very same night that national protests erupted over the brutal killing of George Floyd, an African-American man, by a Minneapolis police officer. Dan Bickford started Santee Loves a year ago to celebrate the city's 40th birthday, but those plans went by the wayside when the COVID-19 shutdown was ordered. Despite racial incidents in Santee's past that the city has tried hard to overcome, even funding a rebranding campaign, Bickford says he's lived in Santee for 15 years and doesn't know of any KKK or hate groups in the city today. The rally drew dozens of local residents, including business leaders, Chamber of Commerce members, and members of local Rotary and Kiwanis service clubs, all taking a stand against hate. Santee's mayor, John Minto, and Councilman Rob McNellis were also present. Santee resident Justin Schlafe, who participated in the rally, says he was horrified to see photos on social media of the KKK masked man in the Vaughn store where he shops with his three-year-old daughter. He says, "This is not what I want for my children." Another participant had a vehicle with a sign that read, "Mexican Gay Republican, Santee Loves Me." The driver, who asked not to be named, told our reporter that Santee has changed in the last 2 decades, adding, "I'm really excited to see the community coming together." The rally began at the Town Center Community Park, after which a bus festooned with anti-hate messages and other vehicles drove to Santee's City Hall, honking and shouting positive messages. At City Hall, Rabbi Rafi Andrusier, with Shabbat of East County, spoke, encouraging people to do good deeds and show kindness and respect toward others. The rabbi concluded, "Love your fellow as yourself, and that's what we're doing here. Goodness and kindness will vanish all those negative things, all the hate." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we have a special report on powerful protests against police violence that drew thousands of participants in La Mesa on Saturday, and on the riots that occurred later that night, leading to the burning down of banks and a historic building, as well as looting and other damage across the city. You'll also hear about the resilience of La Mesa residents who came out during the night to help save this historic downtown district from destruction, and a different kind of mob that turned out Sunday morning to clean up and rebuild and begin the healing process, as well as a fund established to help rebuild La Mesa. We'll also have highlights of local civil rights leader Reverend Shane Harris from his trip to Minnesota, where he brought a check to help the family of George Floyd, the black man whose killing by a white police officer sparked protests nationwide. Hear about Reverend Shane's efforts to bring about positive changes on today's show. We'll also have some news on COVID-19's local impacts, including a disturbing rise in domestic abuse and an unemployment rate here double the national average. Now, if you're a survivor of COVID-19, the County Health Department is urging you to donate blood plasma that can help save lives of others with the coronavirus. And finally, on People Power, we'll tell you about a Santee Loves rally held to stand up against hate and promote inclusiveness, coming on the heels of recent incidents involving hate symbols on masks worn into grocery stores in Santee amid the county's requirement for facial coverings due to the pandemic. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. La Mesa became the spotlight of international news over the weekend when thousands of protesters against police violence took to the streets, shutting down roadways and major freeways. The protesters demonstrated in part over the killing of George Floyd, an African-American man killed by a white police officer in Minneapolis. The officer was videotaped kneeling on Floyd's neck for over 8 minutes while he gasped, "I can't breathe," repeatedly until he died. The officer has been charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter, but three other officers who looked on have been fired and not yet charged, sparking protests nationwide. Locally, protesters also targeted La Mesa after a video on social media showed a La Mesa police officer pushing a black man into a sitting position following an altercation. That video claims the officer accused the man of assaulting him, though it is unclear from the video what may have occurred before or after the brief clip. The officer has been placed on administrative leave pending an investigation. The protest Saturday in La Mesa began peacefully, with marchers chanting George Floyd's name and other messages. And here's what that sounded like. Among the speakers locally was Desiree Smith, who has been lobbying for a ban on chokeholds by San Diego police since the controversial hold was used on her teenage son.
Smith, I'm here on behalf of my son, Eric Smith. He was choked by the police in 2014 at Lincoln High School. And until we get this banned, I will be out here fighting with you. Yes! Yay!
Protest began at the La Mesa police station, then a march proceeded down University Avenue, went onto Interstate 8 and 125, shutting down traffic and breaching a CHP barricade before protesters were turned back. The demonstrators returned to the La Mesa police station, where some in the crowd then began engaging in criminal acts, breaking windows and spray-painting graffiti on the police station. Some demonstrators hurled bottles at law enforcement officers and rocks at a Bearcat armored vehicle. Police and sheriff officers in riot gear fired tear gas and rubber bullets into the crowd. Here's what it sounded like. One woman was reportedly struck in the face by a rubber bullet and hospitalized. By evening, vehicles from outside the initial protests had been observed flooding into the area filled with people wearing all black clothing and black masks. Some carried baseball bats and incendiary devices. Many of these people were white and may belong to groups not affiliated with the Black Lives Matter movement or the earlier protests, which had included local residents as well as some from San Diego and elsewhere. There were rumors on social media that some of these outsiders were anarchists, Antifa, or white supremacists, but there's no evidence yet of exactly who they were. Paul Cruz later was at the scene outside Chase Bank, where another major tragedy was unfolding.
Actually, as you know, are seeing a lot of law enforcement vehicles, which are now guarding the entire block, which has the police department on it, which is the kind of the civic center of La Mesa. Right now, there seems to be now a confrontation brewing at Spring Street and in front of a Chase bank. And so you see numerous people, I mean hordes of people in front of the bank on both sides. And once again, you are seeing very little law enforcement, but boom. But although that it looks like the law enforcement is avoiding physical contact, but rather trying to use the tear gas canisters.
By nightfall, Chase Bank and Union Bank in downtown La Mesa were in flames. A historic building housing an engineering firm also burned to the ground. The situation was also tense at nearby City Hall.
Well, right now that the San Diego Sheriff has just deployed tear gas. And this is like a war out here because you see fires which have been burning right now near the Civic Center. But you also see how everybody, oh my goodness, this is this is the first time I've had tear gas. Whoa!
Oh.
This is intense.
Wow. Well, stay safe, Paul. At the La Mesa Springs Shopping Center, fires were started inside the Vaughn store and a secondhand sporting goods shop. A truck was burned. Windows were broken by rioters with baseball bats, and several businesses were looted before police finally arrived. Looters also broke into Walmart and Target at Grossmont Center. In downtown La Mesa Saturday night, an emergency vehicle was burned. A fire was started inside the city clerk's office at City Hall, where some records were destroyed, although historic documents were saved. Through much of the long night, no firefighters came to address many spot fires. No firefighting aircraft were dispatched. The sheriff declined to use water-dropping helicopters after rioters pointed lasers at a sheriff helicopter, an action which could blind a pilot, one of the officers on scene told us. Councilman Bill Baber told East County Magazine that mutual aid fire crews would not enter the area because there were not enough law enforcement officers to protect the safety of firefighters. At 1:30 in the morning Sunday, the city manager declared a curfew, and one city leader privately shared concerns that the entire village could be lost. During the long night, as posts on social media and video live-streamed by a freelance videographer made clear that looting was starting to occur in the downtown village, some business owners, friends, and neighbors took courageous actions to save La Mesa's century-old downtown village from burning down and spare businesses already hurt by a two-month shutdown during the pandemic from even more losses to looting or fires. Teresa Favreau, head of the La Mesa Village Association and owner of Amethyst Moon, describes how her business was saved.
Some kids tried to break and smash the door with skateboards, and thankfully some community members and shop owners protected my shop.
Wow. How did they do that? How did they scare them away?
I don't know. Some of them had baseball bats.
A resident who asked not to be identified also spoke with us and described the actions of citizens who formed a human chain to protect La Mesa's downtown.
Well, we had heard through friends over social media that people were starting to bash in the doors of our friends' businesses. So a number of people came out and supported them and stood in front of their businesses. And, you know, we just came out in numbers. The people that stood in front of businesses, they didn't screw with their businesses. They just passed on by and only hit the ones that didn't have people standing in front of them. So we walked up and down the street and tried to protect as many businesses as we could.
That's very courageous. Were you armed in any way?
You know, I had a walking stick with me just for my own protection mostly, but we did have people that had bats and, you know, big plumbing plumbing, you know,
but
equipment.
Not guns, just...
No, didn't see anybody with guns. We're not the kind of people, I don't think, unless, you know, it comes to that.
Yeah.
But.
Now, were the protesters, I know that a lot of them had baseball bats. Were they armed with anything heavier than that you saw?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I really don't believe that it was the protesters that did this. I live very
rioters,
close by. I actually live down on University, and I saw quite a few people driving into the town, and they were ready to go. We saw people leaving in cars, you know, jumping in trunks to get out of town after they had done their damage.
Were you able to tell, I mean, what these people looked like? Did you see...
Well, most people had on masks and, you know, were trying to pretend like they were trying to be COVID safe, but they were working in groups and numbers and, you know, they had seekers and they had people, you know, busting windows and other people would run in if they could get it in. And
So it looked like an organized effort.
They've done this before.
Yeah.
People have done this before. It wasn't, I mean, I'm sure there were some randoms that have never done it and they were just jumping on the bandwagon, but for the most part, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah. Did you observe any fires besides the big buildings that were burning?
A couple of times we saw people try to set fires, mostly like in a trash can or at the base of a building, and any of the businesses that were available would grab their fire extinguishers and people would run out and go and extinguish it and chase the people off.
Very good.
I do have a friend that lives over by the train station, the historic train station.
Yeah, I haven't been down there yet. Was that saved?
Yeah, it was saved, but the gentleman did see it from his home, and he has it on video that they tried to light it on fire, and then he ran out and scared them off, and the fire went out. So
wow.
Was really glad that he was there for that, too.
Very good. We're hearing that happened at Sprouts also, that armed neighbors came out, according to social media posts.
Yes.
And chased away would-be looters.
Yes, I've heard that as well. And that's what we do. Thank you to everybody else that helped me protect La Mesa, because this is our town, and we care.
The next morning, on Sunday, a different kind of mob descended on La Mesa. Some 500 to 600 residents, armed with paintbrushes, brooms, and buckets, came to volunteer to clean up the debris, sweep away broken glass, and paint over graffiti across the downtown area.
And we're down here at La Mesa Springs. There are hundreds of volunteers. Panda Express has been giving away meals to the volunteers. They've given out 100 so far. The Rock Church is out here. They're doing a streaming a live prayer vigil. Hundreds and hundreds of people, we're hearing some 500 or 600 volunteers, have turned out all over La Mesa to help clean up the mess that the rioters left last night.
One man came all the way from Alpine to help out.
What's your name?
My name is Jerry Corley.
Jerry Corley. And are you a La Mesa resident?
I'm from Alpine.
So you came all the way from Alpine after you heard about this. Wow.
I laid in here, found a place to get my car, got my paint, and I'm painting.
So you just went to Home Depot and you're helping paint over the graffiti.
Yep, painting over the graffiti.
Good for you.
And make it look good so we can open up tomorrow.
Excellent. And did you buy the paint yourself?
Yeah.
Very good.
Bought the roller, and we're gonna make it green today.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, sir.
In downtown La Mesa, the air was still pungent with the odors of burning rubble and tear gas. As I stood looking at the smoldering ruins, someone played taps on a bugle nearby. Rioters had burned a flag overnight at the American Legion building, but on Sunday morning, a new flag waved proudly out front, a symbol of La Mesa's resilience. Instead of the terrifying sounds of firebombs heard Saturday night across La Mesa, the sounds of hammering and sawing filled the air downtown Sunday morning, with volunteers helping business owners board up windows in case rioters returned. But Sunday night passed peacefully in La Mesa, where Border Patrol officers and members of multiple local police departments came to help protect the city. Instead of graffiti, messages of hope and gratitude were painted onto plywood, sidewalks, and the side of a burned building. A Rebuild La Mesa fund has been started on Facebook by the East County Chamber of Commerce and Phil Ortiz, a councilman in neighboring El Cajon. And by Monday morning, more than $50,000 had been donated as East County residents came together to help La Mesa businesses rebuild. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, from La Mesa, my hometown, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
The brutal killing of George Floyd, an African-American man, by a white police officer, has sparked riots in Minnesota, including the burning of a police station, as well as protests nationwide. On Friday, Reverend Shane Harris, San Diego civil rights leader with the People's Alliance for Justice, flew to Minneapolis to deliver a large financial contribution to the family of George Floyd for funeral expenses. Reverend Harris also hand-delivered a letter to Hennepin County District Attorney Mike Freeman's office urging him to charge the officers or ask the Minnesota Attorney General's office to take the case. Video posted on social media showed an officer kneeling on Floyd's neck for some 9 minutes while Floyd repeatedly tells police officers that he can't breathe until he died. Officers claim he resisted arrest for a nonviolent offense before the filming began. Reverend Harris, in a statement sent to local media Friday, says a black man went to death row before he could ever get to court over an alleged nonviolent offense. He pledged support of his civil rights organization to Floyd's family, and says the district attorney there has the responsibility to deliver justice to the people of Minneapolis and Hennepin County, and we are standing behind those residents until that is done. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
After weeks of stay-home orders during the COVID-19 pandemic, local organizations that support victims of domestic abuse report a sharp rise in people seeking services for the first time. Dilquaz Ahmed of License to Freedom, an organization that primarily serves refugee and immigrant victims of domestic abuse, told East County Magazine that 80% of the calls she received in the last month were from people who had never interacted with the organization before. She says, quote, "We have never been as busy as we have been during COVID-19, adding that License to Freedom's caseload has doubled since the start of the pandemic. The organization has been filing a restraining order on behalf of at least one victim almost every day. Ahmed reports that many issues reported by those seeking help are directly related to coronavirus. Abusers have used the changes in circumstances to seize power and control in households. Ahmed says victims have reported many instances of financial abuse, such as abusers keeping stimulus checks or hiding checks from their partners. The quarantine has created a lot of problems," says Ahmed, who serves primarily Middle Eastern communities, which are typically very family-oriented. Domestic disputes were often arbitrated by extended family, and abused partners could flee to family members' homes. Now, many people have had their safety plans to get away from abusers disrupted because they don't want to spread the virus to elderly parents or relatives. One woman told Ahmed that her husband threatened to kill her, yet she refused Ahmed's offer to pay for a hotel room. According to Ahmed, the woman said she would rather die than put her kids in a situation where they could contract coronavirus. Another organization, the Center for Community Solutions, or CCS, has not received a spike in callers overall to its 24-hour hotline, but has received many calls from people who never sought help from CCS before. Many of the issues they are experiencing also relate directly to COVID-19. Verna Griffin-Tabor, CEO of CCS, says, quote, "Some of the first-time callers are calling about their partners intentionally trying to expose them to COVID, refusing to wear a mask, taunting their partners that way. She views these tactics as ways for abusers to inflict fear and potentially put their partners at risk. Griffin-Tabor is also worried about other tactics, such as taking away insurance cards and documents to prevent victims from seeking care. At one point, CCS had no shelter capacity, but that has improved since landlords are still willing to meet with the clients due in part to moratoriums on evictions for renters impacted by COVID-19. Griffin-Tabor says, quote, "We've been able to transition some of our folks into longer-term housing." Griffin-Tabor says the need for everything is much wider than in the past, including transportation, food, diapers, and shelter. KPBS reports that San Diego Sheriff's Department had a 3% increase in calls reporting domestic disputes from March 1st through April 25th compared to the same time period a year earlier. But victims' advocates worry that the actual rate of abuse is much higher. With abusive partners staying home more, victims may have fewer opportunities to call hotlines for help. Griffin-Tabor concludes, "When things are lightened up in terms of the shelter-in-place order, I anticipate that we are going to get more calls. If you need help due to domestic violence or you know someone who does, CCS runs a free, confidential hotline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call the hotline at 888-385-4657. That number again is 888-385-4657. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the network for social justice, this is Brianna Gomez.
The San Diego Blood Bank is partnering with the county to encourage San Diegans who have recovered from COVID-19 to donate blood plasma, the liquid part of blood which contains antibodies. This plasma could help treat people who are hospitalized or seriously ill from the novel coronavirus. While currently there's no vaccine or proven treatment for COVID-19, convalescent plasma may help patients fighting the virus because the plasma has antibodies against it, says Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's top health official. Any of the more than 7,000 people who tested positive for COVID-19 locally and have recovered could donate plasma, and this is being encouraged by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. David Wellis, the chief executive officer of the San Diego Blood Bank, says the procedure is simple but tremendously impactful. So far, several hundred doses of convalescent plasma have been distributed across Southern California, especially in San Diego County, but more is needed since supply is not keeping up with hospital demand. To donate, go to sandiegobloodbank.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Unemployment analysis by the San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG, shows unemployment countywide is at 30.1%. An all-time high. That's far higher than the national average of 14.7%. And with 39 million Americans out of work as of last week, according to the Department of Labor, the national unemployment rate is the highest it's ever been, even worse than during the Great Depression. More than 500,000 people locally are unemployed, and nearly 460,000 of those lost their jobs after the COVID-19 pandemic began March 7th. A zip code breakdown reveals that the worst unemployment rates as of May 7th are in our inland region, including East County and Southeast San Diego neighborhoods. The highest rates are in Logan Heights at 41.9% and the College area at 36.9%. Among East County cities, two El Cajon zip codes had 33.6% and 32.9% respectively. The Santa Isabel community had 32.9% and Escondido, 32.5%. Inner-city East San Diego neighborhoods, including Encanto, also had very high rates, as well as some South Bay and North County communities in the 32 to 37% range. All of these areas had low single-digit unemployment rates before the pandemic. The survey reflects data through May 9, before some restaurants and retailers began reopening in recent days. During the ninth week of lockdown due to coronavirus, unemployment rates continued to rise, with 22,800 jobs lost between May 2nd and 9th. As of May 21st, when SANDAG last updated its analysis, SANDAG reported new job information remained slow, with businesses making tough decisions, including claiming bankruptcy or choosing not to reopen after stay-at-home orders are lifted. SANDAG indicated for the local economy to significantly improve will require completion of Phase 2 and beginning Phase 3 portions of the governor's roadmap to recovery. Over the past week, many restaurants have reopened for dine-in services, and retailers have begun reopening for shopping in stores. Some of these businesses are now hiring again, though it remains to be seen what degree customers will return, with some ready to venture out, but others opting to stay home longer to avoid potential exposure to the virus. Even if customers fill every table, however, restaurants face daunting challenges due to social distancing requirements, with some losing half to two-thirds of seating. Continuing takeout or delivery options may help cushion some of that loss. Phase 3 businesses are not yet open, including gyms, hair salons, and more. A cautionary note on moving too fast, however, may be found in Missouri, where one hairdresser working despite having symptoms in a reopened salon exposed 91 customers to COVID-19, CBS News reports. Phase 4 businesses that draw large crowds could remain shuttered until sometime next year, such as concert halls and sporting events with spectators. In addition, loss of conventions and tourists shying away from traveling on airlines and cruise ships can be expected to continue to depress San Diego's visitor-based economy for many months to come. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with a People Power report. A Santee community group known as Santee Loves organized Demonstrate Love, a vehicle rally held Wednesday to counter two racially charged incidents at a Santee Bond store and a Food for Less earlier this month. Those incidents, which went viral on social media and made international headlines, involved a man wearing a Ku Klux Klan hood and a couple who wore masks with Nazi swastikas. Both stores were in Santee, although the couple with the swastika mask don't live in the city and are residents of unincorporated El Cajon. Santee's mayor and other community leaders have denounced the actions. Those who wore hate symbols on their masks have claimed they were protesting the county's requirements to wear masks in stores due to COVID-19, but one of the men has a long history of ties to white supremacists. The sheriff investigated the incidents and concluded that though the actions were offensive, no laws were violated. The Santee Loves Vehicle Rally was designed to promote tolerance and inclusiveness. Though planned over the last 2 weeks, the event ironically occurred on the very same night that national protests erupted over the brutal killing of George Floyd, an African-American man, by a Minneapolis police officer. Dan Bickford started Santee Loves a year ago to celebrate the city's 40th birthday, but those plans went by the wayside when the COVID-19 shutdown was ordered. Despite racial incidents in Santee's past that the city has tried hard to overcome, even funding a rebranding campaign, Bickford says he's lived in Santee for 15 years and doesn't know of any KKK or hate groups in the city today. The rally drew dozens of local residents, including business leaders, Chamber of Commerce members, and members of local Rotary and Kiwanis service clubs, all taking a stand against hate. Santee's mayor, John Minto, and Councilman Rob McNellis were also present. Santee resident Justin Schlafe, who participated in the rally, says he was horrified to see photos on social media of the KKK masked man in the Vons store where he shops with his 3-year-old daughter. He says, "This is not what I want for my children." Another participant had a vehicle with a sign that read, "Mexican Gay Republican, Santee Loves Me." The driver, who asked not to be named, told our reporter that Santee has changed in the last 2 decades, adding, "I'm really excited to see the community coming together." The rally began at the Town Center Community Park, after which a bus festooned with anti-hate messages and other vehicles drove to Santee's City Hall, honking and shouting positive messages. At City Hall, Rabbi Rafi Andrusier, with Shabbat of East County, spoke, encouraging people to do good deeds and show kindness and respect toward others. The rabbi concluded, "Love your fellow as yourself, and that's what we're doing here. Goodness and kindness will vanish all those negative things. All the hate." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Priebel, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.